Chicago Cubs play here.
Bodie drives one in the air. Deep center field. There goes Taylor. It's got a chance. It's a grand slam. A grand slam for David Bodie. And the Cubs have won the ballgame.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. A radio.com station. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studio. The Score.
This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
Joe's doing all the talking.
Joe Maddon.
It's a great time to just, like, talk about stuff.
World Series winning manager.
I don't understand the negative mindset whatsoever. I don't understand pessimism. I don't know enough to be pessimistic, quite frankly.
Connoisseur of fine art.
The David's all about pitching. The Salvador Dali's all about catching. The Mona Lisa, she's about putting the art back into the game and about defense because Renaissance chicks dig the leather.
Joe Maddon with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Joe Madden's on Twitter at Cubs Joe Mad with two D's, and he joins us Tuesdays at noon most of the time here on the Bernstein and McKnight show. Joe, hello.
Good morning or afternoon. How you guys doing?
Good afternoon, just now, in fact.
Just now, okay, you got it.
Just now at 12:00:14. What is the latest on Yu Darvish? Was the MRI done? What more do we know?
I think it was done, but I have not gotten a report back. I'll know more when to the ballpark today. So I don't have any really new or good information for you right now. I'll visit with the trainer, and I'll, of course, at that point, he'll relate to me what the doctors had said, and then I'll be able to understand it better.
When you came out of the rehab start, who was the first person you talked with? What was the conversation kind of surrounding?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I heard about it in the dugout. That's all I knew, that he had come out. And then talked to the trainers, and they said, you know, he's got to be evaluated by the doctors some more, and that's where I'm at right now. We had the off day yesterday, and there was really nothing going back and forth a whole lot yesterday, so I'm looking forward to hearing about it today, and that's where I'm at right now.
Without a structural problem that a doctor can point to in one of these diagnostics, without them saying, yes, bingo, right here, mm-hmm. Where do you exist in the in-between with a player respecting that a player knows his body, but also having to trust that the doctors are saying, yeah, he could do this or he could do that, depending on how he feels? It has to be very difficult to manage the understanding of a player saying what he says when also maybe trying to push a little bit with the go-ahead from the doctors.
No, I always listen to the player first. Absolutely. He knows how he feels. If you just think about yourself, you know that better than anybody else. So I always listen to the player first. I never dispute or second guess if somebody tells me they're injured. That's it. And then I have to react accordingly as a manager to make sure that I don't make it even worse. And then beyond that, you do listen to the doctors, and then you just try to figure out, you know, what's the exact specific or exact right plan to move forward with. But believe me, man, the moment you start doubting other folks, and especially professional athletes, you're getting yourself into a real bad moment, because unless you're inside that body, you don't know. And it's easy for folks to second guess, and that's why I've learned to not be that guy, because outcome bias, second guessing, all that kind of stuff is just what it is. It's a guess, and you have no clue.
Granted, Joe, we're working with a couple of things we don't know about yet. We haven't seen the results of whatever scans have been done on you, and you haven't even talked to him yet either. So we're kind of dealing a little hypothetical, but humor me if I guess you can. You know, Dan and I have been wondering some about the long term of this, right? I mean, it's so late in the season as it is, and if he is able to, you know, squeeze a rehab together or something like that, at what cost does it come? You know, when do you have conversations, you, Joe Maddon, have conversations with either Yu Darvish or that front office and everybody else that makes decisions there about what's good for the short term and what's good for the long term?
Well, I mean, it's real simple. If the guy's not ready to pitch, he's not ready to pitch, and you don't try to force that issue at all. It's no different than what KB's going through right now. You don't force that, or Brandon Morrow. You know, we're missing some, like I've talked about, all pro players right now, but if you can't, you can. And then what you got to do is, you know, work with the guys that you have and try to make the situation as best as you possibly can. But there's nothing to do except to listen to you and the doctors and try to figure out the next step. I've never tried to push somebody back on the field ever on any level, because I think that's inappropriate. The player knows, and like I said, in conjunction with the doctors, and then you try to make your best guess. But all this other stuff, to me, is just fabricated stuff that I don't go anywhere near that.
You mentioned both Bryant and Morrow. Any update?
KB I went through some swings the other day again and is feeling pretty good. I don't even know if he might be taking some BP on the field today or not. I'm not 100% sure, but I know he's trending properly. And Brandon's been playing some catch, and I'll know more again when we get out there today. I don't have a finish line on either one of those guys. For as much as I'd love to say that we do, I don't. Again, it's biology. It's a human being. It's getting well. And for all those reasons, I'm more worried about putting together today's lineup. How's the bullpen today? The guys that are available. That's where I got to spend my mental moments. Not, when is this finish line going to occur? Because it serves no useful purpose.
So what's the rotation plan now with so many variables, with Montgomery being out? I don't know if you plan to do the Chatwood thing again, or you want to call up an arm or bullpen that. How does this lay out now for this big, important stretch without a break?
Yeah, we have to figure that out. We're going to, again, discuss that more today. I'll have to get together with Hick and the boys and then also Theo and Jed and discuss how we're going to do this moving forward. We got Kyle today, John tomorrow, and then Hamels. I think it's Friday's the date in question. Today's Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah, Friday's the date in question. So we got to figure that out. And then after that, we'll be good again. So we'll try to figure out exactly how we want to go after Friday. And as soon as we figure that out, we'll let everybody know.
Are you able to plan any more down the road than Friday, really? I mean, just the way the rotation has set for you, you've got, and with 23 in a row like this, it kind of seems like you got to keep the short term pretty much the only thing in mind.
That's where I'm at. I do believe Mike Montgomery is going to get back relatively quickly. I think he, out of this whole group we've been talking about, Monty should be the first back. And then once he does that, we'll be able to pop him in. Then that all of a sudden might give guys an extra day in this significant stretch we're going through. But again, I'm really short term oriented right now. We've only scored one run in the last four games. I mean, that's probably my bigger concern than anything. Our pitching has been trending well. The bullpen's been outstanding. So my biggest concern right now is that it's how to piece this all together short term wise. I did today's lineup. I tried to look into tomorrow's. They got Liriano pitching tomorrow's Zimmerman today, and that's my focus is on Detroit.
So, what's the reflection in the lineup that looks into that?
Just trying to figure out how to get guys back on Tierra Firma, like swinging like they can. Watching that series in Pittsburgh was difficult, and a difficult series to manage. People may not understand that, but when you're involved in so many 1-0 games, trying to figure out when's the right time to get the next pitcher in there. For instance, the other day with Quintana, not that he was pitching badly, but I didn't expect us to score a lot of runs, and you bring in CJ, and he gets through that somehow. And then eventually we turn a five-man infield double play and get through that somehow. When you get to that point where you're not scoring runs, the thought process is different. We hit run more than we have in the past. We try different plays. And they picked Addison off at third, and I'm here to tell you, folks, that could have happened to anybody with Addison. That's the one time they did something against us that they haven't done in the last 4 or 5 years, and thus it worked well for them. So don't blame Addison. You got to take some chances sometimes to score runs. So moving it forward, we just got to continue with the same methods in regards to getting the guys back to normal. I believe in our hitters. I believe there's a nice run coming up, but for right now, it's been difficult.
Talking with Joe Maddon, Cubs skipper, the Cubs in first place in the NL Central, a 3-game lead on the Milwaukee Brewers, a 5-game lead in the loss column, and yet it's amazing when you look at some of the specific offensive numbers so far in the second half. I know Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic did a nice job putting some of this together. Looking at runners in scoring position, the Cubs have a hard hit rate of 25.6% in those cases, which is last in baseball, ground ball rate of 53.7%, which is highest in baseball. And you often say, Joe, about using the whole field, they actually have a pull rate that is relatively low, because in these situations, it's not as if they're pulling the ball too much. It's 38.4% with runners in scoring position. That ranks just 24th. So what needs to get unlocked in these situations? And is there any commonality around which you can manage and kind of seize on here?
I don't even know what the strikeout rate is right there either. Again, just to get back to the hard contact, I think you talked about that early hard contact middle off field. I'm just watching guys that really are fouling their pitches off. It's it's one of those moments you go through where, in spite of all the work you're doing and all the good success you've had in the past, it's just not happening right now. It's unusual to not have anybody hot. I mean, right now we got pretty much nobody's, except maybe Zoe. Zoe's been pretty consistent. Anthony's been hanging in there pretty good, but we got, I mean, like really scorching. We need one of those, at least, or hopefully two of those to get going, and that makes all the difference in a 1-0 game. It's just one of those things, man. You stay with it, you be patient, you keep working, you keep staying positive, and eventually your guys come out the other side. I'd imagine among that pull rate, a lot of it's pulled ground balls, like you've been talking about. Rollover ground balls, that's just probably swinging at pitches outside the zone, putting bad pitches in play. I think that's part of it, too.
You asked about strikeout rate. The runners in scoring position since the break, 22.2%, which is not statistically different from the all-situations rate of 21%. So it's not as if there are more strikeouts.
Yeah, that's pretty average. That's pretty normal. I mean, but I mean, whenever I look at our work and it says 20 to 21%, my mental perception at that point is it's this guy's going to strike out an average amount of times. 1 out of 5 is pretty much average. So then we're staying right there. It's just probably chasing pitches out of the zone, not being as patient. And when you see your pitch, you can't foul it off.
Joe, we've talked a little bit, a couple of times, about your propensity to kind of like link guys in lineups, you know, chain and have that protection in a lineup here or there. Because of Zobrist's consistency, is that maybe where you start to look at perhaps doing some things different than you had in the season, knowing that, you know, he's given you some consistent at-bats, maybe you start chaining him together with somebody either before or after him that you hadn't before?
I linked him with Anthony today. I had to get some, I mean, if you watch the games in Pittsburgh, they don't want to pitch to Anthony at all.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I love him hitting leadoff. I mean, I try to figure this whole thing out. When he's hitting leadoff, if they really choose to not throw at him or pitch to him right there, then the linkage behind him is pretty good. Schwarber's hit some balls pretty well lately, but for the most part, when we get past four, it's been rather inconsistent, and that's my biggest concern. So I put Zoe behind Anthony today to just afford him that kind of protection. I did that several years ago when we were getting to the World Series in the playoffs. I always try to protect Anthony with Zoe because that's probably the most respected at-bat we have on the team. So those are the kind of things I'm looking at right now, but we just got to keep working with him, man. I should say Jason Heyward. He turned Vasquez around again the other day, and he's been outstanding. So we just got to get guys, like you said, linked together. We got to get more, a couple guys like legitimately hot as opposed to just tepid on occasion and see what happens.
Last week at this time, you teased us by saying that you and the pitching infrastructure had maybe noticed some things that John Lester was doing or not doing that you could work with and try to coax out of him. And indeed, it looked like you did. He looked like he was back to being in command of his stuff and not as wild in the strike zone. This is just, we were trying to figure out some differences, a little more use of the curveball and changeup and more differential in velocities to keep guys from getting comfortable and get them off balance a little bit. Is that what you did or was it something more?
Well, you can look at all that stuff. I mean, if you think about the spat starts before that, all of his pitches velocity-wise are pretty clumped together. The cutter is a couple miles an hour slower than the fastball. He'll throw a hard cutter almost 90, and then he'll throw his fastball 90, 91. The curveball does afford, getting them off that. And I think he gets a lot of chase out of that when he bounces it on the plate. The changeup is another pitch that I love. I think as he moves forward later into his career, you're going to see that become an even more prominent pitch for him because I think it's good. I think it's good. It's a latent pitch for him. He didn't have it early on in his career, but that pitch to me can make a big difference moving forward for John. More than anything, I thought he had a great look about him. He was pounding the strike zone. He had great low carry on his fastball. And he was surprising hitters with all this, and he was attacking them and not getting into bat counts. Best summation of all that would be that I thought he was a more simple approach to everything he was doing.
Joe, a lot of focus with 23 in a row goes on the pitchers, obviously, the rotation and bullpen, but I couldn't help but think that, you know, one of the guys who this day off and then subsequent 23 in a row might affect the most could be Addison Russell. You've mentioned his finger, I think it is, might be bugging him a little bit more than he's reported. You got him a little bit of a rest on the 19th day off yesterday. How careful do you have to be with him knowing that he's Addison Russell and he's going to try and get himself out there regardless of whether you want him out there or not sometimes?
Well, the other thing to consider with him, you look at his defensive metrics, and how he's viewed as a defensive player. I don't even know if it's just a National League of all of baseball, but this guy's like top 10 defensive player in both leagues. So it's hard to get his glove out of the game. Everybody's always, and again, right now we're not scoring runs. I get it. But do you see the defense? I mean, a lot of that 1-0 stuff was all based on defense in Pittsburgh. We did some really good stuff, bunt defenses. We said the five-man infield plays at the plate. We did a lot of good things on that side of the ball that permitted us. If you look at our record over the last couple of weeks, I mean, our record's actually not bad. And that's in spite of really not hitting the baseball well. And because I just love the level of defense. And I've talked about that. I really believe in our guys going to come back offensively. So Addison, yes, the hand is bothering him a bit, his knuckle, whatever. He does not relay to me exactly to what level he wants to be out there, and I love him for it. So we're going to keep. He's going to be out there tonight. Kyle Hendricks pitching. You want to catch the ball. There should be theoretically a lot of ground balls against Detroit, so we'll see how that plays out. But I have to speak with him constantly to try to figure out the right method to get this swing back, to get that hard contact back while he's playing this very high level of defense.
I know the way we feel as fans or observers is doesn't necessarily reflect the way your team actually feels, the way the clubhouse feels or the team playing. But I'm wondering, is this a time of year where you're more cognizant of the pressure versus pleasure balance and relationship and making sure that you're not letting the bad exceed the good, finding ways to make sure? Look, guys are hurt. The games have been tough. There's been a lot of heat loss in what has been a really, really good season still. But is this one of those times where, like, maybe sometimes you get the feeling that your team needs to just be a little happier with itself?
Well, yeah, that starts with me. If they see me show up uptight, I mean, that's gonna pour over into them. Actually, I think we're in much better shape this year at this time than we were that last year at this time. And there's a lot going on that's good, in spite of like some really critical injuries in a sense, with some really high profile players. So the boys will reflect my attitude. I know that. Had a great dinner last night with Brandon Hyde, Peter Chase, and Will Venable, and we had some great discussions outside of baseball. Listen, it is a game. My guys will see me show up the same way today. The moment you stop believing and trusting in your guys, then you really should do something else. I do believe in and trust my guys, and I really believe that the offense will show. But other than that, if you want to focus on pitching and defense, we couldn't have done a much better job than we did in Pittsburgh.
You mentioned the defense, the 7 double plays. I've seen a game, I've been involved in a game with 5 before and couldn't believe how many that felt like. Were you ticking them off in your head? Have you ever been in a minor league game with 7 double plays?
I think maybe 5, maybe 6. But it was the way we did it. Our pitching was so good that there were not really hard hit ground balls. There were definitely absolutely routine ground ball double play pitches that were made by our pitcher, and then, except for the one line drive. That's the part that it wasn't like these backhand stabs and, you know, great plays on hard hit balls. They were really well pitched pitches that put the ball in play to the point that made the double play somewhat routine. It was interesting to watch. Listen, when the game's 1-0 early and you say to yourself, this could be it, and you really have to pay attention with that thought in mind, it's different. I'm telling you, it's different. And you could feel it happening. And actually, the game that Quintana's game, if the ball doesn't go off of his glove, that was another 1-0 game staring us in the face. So it was a really awkward 4-game series there for those reasons. You normally don't see that many 1-0s popping up. But our pitching and defense were, you know, again, everybody's focusing on offense, and so am I a bit, but I've been talking about the pitching getting better. It has. Talk about playing defense on a daily basis and should be the most consistent part of our game, and it is. So now we just got to get the bats going again.
Got the designated hitter for a couple games. You know, you always fill in that lineup, and you start looking from the beginning of the game to the end and then the end of the game to the back. How does having the DH slot change what you're doing?
Well, it's obviously just it's a totally different mindset. The big part of that is how you deal with your pitching during the game. Not having to follow where the pitcher is in the batting order helps a lot in regards to just manipulation of bullpen. I mean, everybody talks about the DH, which is wonderful, but what it really does is you don't have to follow the pitching as closely in a sense, and you can stay with people longer, or you can manipulate the bullpen differently later just based on how this thing is going. No different. I mean, tonight's going to be Schwarber. Tomorrow's Liriano's pitching, so I got to figure out something differently. he's been tough on left-handed hitters primarily, but it's the biggest thing about the DH. Obviously, you get one more hitter, but the other part that really changes it up is that the way you manipulate pitching is entirely different.
Joe, best of luck in this stretch. Always appreciate you taking the time to join us.
You guys be well. Thanks.
That is Joe Madden, Cubs skipper, brought to you by Spot Hero. Finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter.
I guess the message there from Joe is pretty simple. He's not asking Yu Darvish to do anything Yu Darvish isn't comfortable doing.
That was loud and clear.
That was crystal. It was absolutely ironclad, right? I mean, that's not changing. So until Yu Darvish feels comfortable with the medical results of whatever test he's going to undergo or has undergone or will undergo in the future, that's going to be Joe's end-all be-all. He's not asking guys to do something they're uncomfortable doing.
Yeah, so I think you should just put away this idea that somehow the Cubs are going to force Yu Darvish, hey, you know, another clean MRI. And we don't know that the MRI is clean.
No, we don't.
The concern, you get to the Derrick Rose kind of situation where all the doctors are saying, yeah, we can't find anything wrong.
Yeah, the next part is play.
However, there have been numerous situations, especially with pitching, where someone has said, it's not right. And eventually, it almost always the player is right.
You can't see it all, too. Well, there's the possibility that MRI doesn't show you everything you need to see, that can be somewhat hidden or obscured. Regardless of how many you go through or how many tests you make work, you kind of, I mean, listen, Joe's somewhat old school approach here is kind of right. You just have to listen to the player. Otherwise, you're only going to put yourself behind the eight ball. And if you're counting anything from this guy, how are you going to do it if he's A, hurt, and B, uncomfortable?
Yeah, the other note, I think, was the acknowledgement that Addison Russell's finger is still affecting him at the plate, if not affecting his defense. And the fact that they haven't met to figure out what that pitching staff's going to look like yet.
Well, I mean, I don't know how you could. With the way Friday, I mean, Joe's talking about that Friday start, that opportunity to perhaps throw Chatwood again or someone else or bullpen a game or what have you. I don't know how you could plan anything during a 23-game stretch when you look at Friday and go, no idea how many innings you might get from starter or whatever guy ends up taking the bulk of the innings if you end up going bullpen game. I can't imagine that you'd want to go do that and perhaps tax, what, six arms? Potentially six arms if you go through a rough one?
All right, let's find out what you thought of what you heard from Joe Madden. We will discuss further, and we'll get your input at 312-644-6767. We are the Bernstein and McKnight Show. You're listening to The Score.
Cubs fans, listen to every Cubs game here.
3-2 to Schwarber.
Swung on, drilled in the air. Get out the tape measure, long gone. It was up, and it was clobbered, and the Cubs lead 1-0.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score, official radio home of the Chicago Cubs.
This is John Feinstein with the CBS Sports Minute, brought to you by the National Association of Realtors. Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal are celebrated, rightfully, as the two greatest male tennis players of all time. Federer has won 20 majors, Nadal 17, and both are still going strong. But Novak Djokovic certainly belongs in the conversation. After losing almost 2 years of his career because of an elbow injury, Djokovic came back last month to win Wimbledon. He's 31, 5 years younger than Federer and a year younger than Nadal. On Sunday, he finally won his first title in Cincinnati, significant because he beat Federer to do it and because it made him the first player to win all 9 of the ATP Tour's Masters 1000 titles. If Djokovic can win next month's U.S. Open in New York, he'll tie Pete Sampras for third on the all-time majors list with 14 wins. Watch out, Roger and Rafa. I'm John Feinstein.